Felicia Zamora, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thanks, Daniel. I'm really, really excited to be on the show with you.
Well, let's start with, instead of, you know, me reading a biography, let's kind of walk through your biography, your poetic biography, that is, a little bit. Your first book came out, which is Form and Gather, and that won the 2016 Andres Montoya Poetry Prize. That must have been a nice bit of news to hear about. Do you remember that day, the day you heard?
Oh, I actually do. Gosh, I'm so glad you asked about it. Edwin Torres was the poet who chose my work. And I remember I was actually in Napa Valley for a little vacation with some friends. And I had just walked down the street to go get like a water or Sprite or something all by myself. And Edwin called me and he tells me, Felicia, you just won the Montoya Prize. And I started screaming, jumping up and down, like, I don't know, like a 7-year-old.
Oh, my God.
And thanking him profusely because I honestly hadn't thought that, like, a book prize was something that was really, I mean, I knew it eventually was going to happen, but for some reason I had sort of, like, in my mind said, oh, you know, this is going to take years and years and years. And yeah, I remember, and he laughed at me very graciously.
Right, absolutely.
No, in a very kind way. And, but yeah, that's a prize meant winning that meant a whole lot to me.
Wow, yeah, I bet.
And what I learned later, right, is it wasn't just, you know, winning a book prize and getting like a title attached to a book and having your book live in the world. The Montoya Prize actually led to a larger connection for me in the Latinx community, which until that point I had felt pretty siloed an artist.
Right. That's interesting. Did that start in graduate school, that feeling of being siloed?
Yeah, definitely. For a few different reasons, though. Yes, being one of the very few artists of color who actually went through my grad program, but also I was working full-time. So I was working at Colorado State University before I actually applied to the MFA program.
What were you doing?
And so I was academic advising. The College of Business. Yeah. I had like 600 advisees a semester.
Oh my God. I'm department chair, so I know what that means. That is crazy.
Yeah. And, you know, I loved it, though. I absolutely loved it. Uh-huh. Yeah, I felt like it was a wonderful moment to connect with students. I did it for almost 6.5 years. But I'm a severe introvert, and so the talking every day, nonstop, it eventually gave me hives during during busy periods. But I loved the connection with students and kind of what academic advising actually taught me as a professional and as a human being, too.
You know, I notice in your book, the one we're going to talk about, Body of Render, you have a lot of references to the parts of the brain, the amygdala, the frontal lobe. And it seems like you dabble somewhat in lay neuroscience. And I'm thinking about seeing all those students, you know, I don't know, 8 hours a day and facing a challenge that was probably really good for your brain.
It was. And it also taught me how to be generous and how to really listen. I am obsessed with the body in many ways. And I think that I turn inward when I am having a hard time understanding or conceptualizing our social, economic, and political situations in this country and decisions that are being made. And I turn inward to look at us on a very cellular, very organic level, because we are so connected. You know, we are made of materials that each one of us are made of the exact same things on the inside. We have marsh gases in our stomach, right? Uh-huh. You know, we connect to each other. We connect to the land. We are natural beings in a natural world. And it helps me explain things.
Right.
When I can't make sense.
Wow, that's beautifully stated. You know, you say that you I'm not using your exact language. Something about retreating into yourself, or it reminds me of a line from one of your poems on in the book Body of Render that really struck me. It says, "Be done now with this hiding inside bone." Is that hiding inside bone what you're talking? Is that what you're talking about?
I am. I actually think that we as human beings carry this duality of self at all times anyway. We have our physicality, right, or what I like to lovingly think of as our meat puppet.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's great. I love that.
And then this consciousness that we carry, this chatter that happens in our brain,
uh-huh,
and how all of our, non-living pieces of us make us work, and make us function. And, we constantly have the self inside and then the self that we carry around in our physicality, and we do our everyday of language and communication. And I think that there is so much that fear and oppression and discounting oneself, and basically we hold our voices back.
Right, right.
We hold ourselves back. I know that I have.
Right. I think most people have.
Journey, yeah.
I think that's part of, what it is to be human, is to learn how to, hopefully learn how to negotiate or use your consciousness in ways that are, perhaps a little bit more productive, or a little bit more productive, yeah, sounds too capitalistic, but a little bit more conducive to living a full life and to accessing the fullness of the imagination.
And I would actually say on top of that, it's also this learning to believe and love oneself.
Right,
believe in oneself and love oneself. It is, I think a lot of the problems that come from our society begin in the self, and this sort of territorialism, or this non-love of the self, or fear of things. And if we really learn to turn and to love ourselves, we learn how to show love in a much stronger way.
Yeah. Oh my God. This is fantastic, because I want to talk to you more about this and about how thought and emotion, how we could effectively, observe those and see exactly what they are doing to our sense of identity so many other things. But let's get back to the book, because I need to get you on later for a longer conversation. but let's go back to Napa. You left your friends. You were going to go get a water or what were your friends doing at the time?
I think they were just hanging out in the hotel room.
Okay. So were you eager to get back to tell them?
Yeah. Yes, I did. I went back to tell them, but not right away. I actually walked to the water, and then I just spent some time by myself, like walking on streets that I don't even remember.
Wow.
But I needed a minute to just think about how I was becoming, how I was becoming the thing that I had been working toward, and how, if you imagine enough, you can imagine the self being.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like it was a walk of gratitude, and that the landscape itself was there to thank.
I think so. I mean, for me, I feel like the landscape and we find ourselves in place, and it's not it's not an accident.
Right.
And moments are revealed to us later, just how important that moment was. And there's a lot of reasons why that specific day was so important. It was in April, too, I think.
Oh, nice. Don't tell me it was the 22nd or the 23rd.
Oh, I don't even remember. I don't remember what full date it was, but I do think it was the middle to late April.
Oh, it might very well have been there, because yesterday I was talking to some students about, I wrote two dates on the board, April 22nd, 1616, and April 23rd, 1616. And we have a bilingual community, and I'm taking them to Europe this summer, to Spain and to the UK. And I says, what's significant about these dates? And then I told them that on the first day, the 22nd. Cervantes died. The next day, across the water, Shakespeare died. I just thought it was kind of
funny. I mean, there are so many connections through time and space that this universe tethers in between our consciousness and bodies, that it's actually quite in some respects, for me, it's quite relieving
to feel
such connection sometimes, even though it's random, right?
Yeah,
there's so much randomness.
And there's probably so many connections that we don't even have the capacity to recognize it. Like, for example, let's say that you were, not that you have to be, because I don't want to think in linear terms, but let's say you were taking that walk on April 23rd and April 20th, or April 22nd, that your perhaps not consciousness, but your unconsciousness connects to a day really when that is, you know, a completely, you know, something about language changed that day or began to transform that day when two of the greatest writers in the English and the Spanish language died, one right after another.
Absolutely. Yeah. And how, you know, and for me specifically too, how, you know, I am deeply connected to being Latinx as
right.
culturally, but I am estranged from the language because I don't speak Spanish, and
yeah.
there's a history for that. But I feel like, you know, we're torn sometimes between our cultures and our identities and outstanding and yet unconscious ways. I think you said that really well.
Yeah, you know, I want to do a whole show pretty soon on what it means to be human, just to kind of throw around ideas about that. I think that would be a fun show. But let's talk about being a poet. After your, you know, at least we're having these great digressions. I think they're wonderful. But
but that is being a poet is being human, because I think that
yes.
poetry lives inside all of us, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Art is a humanistic core expression.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that if we were to even begin to define what it is to be human, we are going to ultimately and necessarily use a lot of poetry, quote a lot of poetry, in trying to express what that is.
Well, and one of the projects or things that I'm actually thinking about, I'm going to be leaping off into here in the very near future, is this sort of exploration of magic and imagination as a survival skill for, you know, Latinx, but also marginalized populations.
Oh,
and
wow.
how without our imagination, we could have found ourselves and individuals find themselves in a completely different, you know, situation of their existence. Like we need our magic and survival, or we need our magic and imagination to be. And to be able to be present.
Right, right. And, you know, it's interesting because when we talk about metaphysics, whether we're referring to the occult or whether we're referring to, you know, Swedenborg or Kabbalah or those mystical things which are intimately and historically connected to the occult, what we're really talking about is reaching a higher level of consciousness. And for poets, you know, and I consider poets people who write creatively, you know, fiction writer, I don't care, poets, for poets, that is accessing the imagination in ways that are unfettered by our own, the thoughts that are rooted in our body, as opposed to the thoughts that we discover in the creative realm.
They're ineffable, right?
Like
part of the process of poetry and the absolute beauty and power of it is that it's not all able to be explained, both in process and, one could even argue, in its final sort of experience that the reader and writer share together over time and space.
Yeah. Yeah, I was talking to Tracy K. Smith the other day. She was here for a reading, and she has this
poem. I'm very jealous.
Oh, that is fantastic. She has this poem about, you know, being a little girl and looking out the window and seeing the stars. And then she says something like, you know, I'm still trying to reach those stars. And she says, they're not God, you know, but just to say they're not God is really to say that they are God. They are the ineffable. They are, you know, reaching. And I think that, you know, one of the other things that makes us human is desire. And that desire, if you purify it, well, maybe that's a judgmental way of saying, but the less you filter it through your own consciousness rooted in the body and in the landscape, you know, then the more that becomes that pure energy, that pure energy of desire and desire and desire. Mm. And that is what the poet does, right? The poet desires.
Yeah. But desire is such a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Right. I think that, you know, we think of the term like to love oneself. It's almost as if it's tainted, like, oh, you're a selfish person if you love yourself. Well, there's nothing wrong with being selfish. And actually, you know, it's like putting your own oxygen mask on first.
Right.
Well, once you do that, then you can help others. You can do other things to make the world a better place when you self-care and you love yourself. The same would be with desire. Like we almost like taint the word desire, but desire is a very strong and deeply rooted sense within our humanity.
Yeah. I think
why do we deny desire?
I think people confuse desire with want, because want singularizes on something specific. And when you do that, you limit your possibilities. And desire becomes kind of creepy.
Yeah. Well, and then desire doesn't mean that we navigate without responsibility either.
Right.
I mean, that's the other thing. It's like desire sort of takes our ethics and takes responsibility, in my opinion, to even a bigger level, because desire then really isn't a singular thing. It actually can become, you know, a societal thing. It can be a thing that becomes wish fulfillment.
Right.
Like William Carlos Williams had borrowed from Freud to call the poem, like Freud had called the dream, a place for wish fulfillment.
Uh-huh.
And I believe that. I mean, that's what art becomes.
So
poetry and art becomes this reflection of our desires.
You know, I can't help but share with you something I found in Kabbalah about desire. It's a quote that I return to a lot and think about a lot. And it's that, you know, desire, it's not the obtaining of the object of the desire. It's not obtaining that's important. It's just having the desire that's important. I'm probably not paraphrasing it very effectively, but yeah, absolutely. Desire without form, desire that has yet to be converted into want. And it's, if we think about consciousness, I think there's this idea of, you know, as writers, you know, as poets, you know, one of the things that we want to be able to do is to wander into that imaginative world, to that imaginative realm.
Yeah.
We want to be able to wander into it. But we need to understand the difference between wandering and drifting, because drifting, you have absolutely no idea where the water is going to take you. And whereas wandering, we have a purpose, and that purpose is to explore and to, you know, whatever it is, you know, but to drift, I think, is when we allow our thoughts, the thoughts that are rooted in our pain and that are rooted in our emotions, you know, that are rooted in the moment of being offended or something like that. If we drift, that's not as much of a creative act, and it's not going to get us to the imaginative realm as successfully as wandering. But that's, I've been thinking about that. So,
Well, that's a great space to be thinking about, too, because, you know, when thinking about the poem, I think of, you know, for me, the definition of poetry is an artistic expression that creates an experience.
Yeah.
And it is a world that we want a reader to fall into. In many ways, we as the artists are also falling into it. There's this allowance of being held within the world that's created in the art. And I think that's absolutely necessary to allow to be held. You know, I think wandering, yes, there's intention behind it, but I also do think, you know, the drifting has its value of giving over to something every so often, the thing that we can't explain, but the thing that might ache inside.
Right. But what I mean, just to clarify, like when you wander, you enter into a city for the first time and you wander into that city, you have an internal map. And whether you think you're going off, you're actually following some sort of internal map. And I think that the more you develop that internal map and aware of what it is, the more you're able to distinguish it from thoughts that are perhaps rooted in those moments that ultimately don't contribute to your your access to imagination. I'm talking about those thoughts of doubt, the thoughts that you don't love yourself and you're always telling yourself that. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, we're saying the same thing. But you talked about getting us into your imagination. You are one of the only poets I could think of in many years that writes about snow leopards. How did the snow leopards get into your work? I'm talking about this beautiful poem called The Wild in Which We, from your book, Body of Render. And you have these snow leopards in the Himalayan mountains that appear. How did these leopards find their way into your work?
Well, this may be a story that's like not all that exciting, except for the fact that I am just obsessed with nature documentaries.
Oh, wow.
I mean, documentaries. Uh-huh. Overall, I love to listen to and read and watch shows and places, especially places that I don't think I'll ever be. You know, uh-huh. I want to be,
wow.
but I may never be on the ocean bottom, like for real. That may never happen. I may never go down, you know, all the way to the bottom of the ocean. And so I like to watch these documentaries and sort of imagine what conceptually that's like. And honestly, for me, these endangered species are of great interest to me as well, because I think whether we want to admit it or not, we humans are an endangered species due to our actions and potential of global warming and climate change. But I think one of the activities that I did with this group called Crisis and Creativity in Colorado is where we had poets and scientists working together. We got a grant, and we actually showed an erasure project of we took a passage from the book of Genesis and did an erasure project to remove certain words that would show in text what it would look like, the disappearance of the biodiversity in the world.
Hmm.
And
wow, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was such a great project. I was with Dan Beachy Quick, who is a mentor and friend of mine, a poet at Colorado State University, who was helping lead with some of the scientists there. And then for me, the snow leopards have come in from a multitude of influences, from sitting and watching documentaries, but then also caring about, you know, these species that are really kind of hitting the verge of extinction in some ways. And for me, I'm fascinated about, you know, sort of these animalistic instincts and how we still have them as human beings.
Right, right.
And if you look closely at the way like a snow leopard interacts with pursuing a mate, like this sort of lonely journey, and yet the aggression that comes around of looking for connection, it is spooky how one can feel a resonation at resonating in one's own actions or one's own journey of trying to find community or the self or identity. So that's where it comes from.
Well, you know, Body of Render is it's a beautiful book, but you know, one of the things that it addresses the 2016 elections, and you know, the fact that we have, you know, a president that, you know, is actually more embarrassing than George W. Bush, if that's possible. We have a
you
write a lot about politics, and you write about the other in this book, but the fact that you invite snow leopards into your language also invites magic into the book, and I think it's beautiful. It's called Body of Rendered. It just came out with Red Hen Press. It's the Benjamin Saltman Award winner. Congratulations on that. We're running
Thank
out of
you.
Time, and so, but I would love for you to read a poem, and I have a short one chosen, but if you have one that you would rather read, that would be good too.
Oh, no, I'd love to hear which one you've chosen. And
well,
Daniel, thanks so much for talking with me. And I just, even though this book has hard moments, because it's about the social trauma of 2016 that we're as a collective still going through, right?
Right.
It is hopeful.
Yeah.
Because as our bodies change, as our society changes, as our politics change, we all have a hand in it, right?
Right.
And so there's amount of hopefulness here in this book that I'm hoping also comes through.
Oh, absolutely. There's in your Poems to America, it's a series of poems sprinkled throughout the book. Lovely poems, but you have one that I love, and it just simply goes, "Say, be just."
Yeah.
And that just says so much, and it says so much about the book too. I mean, it is a beautiful book, and it does give me hope. And can you read, since I love geeking out with metaphors of those systems that try to explain the theory of everything, you know, neuroscience, physics, mysticism. Mm-hmm. If Starlight Be, can you read that?
Oh,
one?
I will. Yes. Let me get to
or
that.
Of Here mouth is heavenly body. Both of them are pretty.
Okay.
Which one would you rather read?
I will read if Starlight Be.
Okay.
If Starlight Be. If starlight be, how visible and electromagnetic your form, and all the parts of the unseen we take for granted. Decisions on Capitol Hill spoken into law without say of anyone other than, say, elected official. Say, O radiation of you lost behind another broken system. Say, we made it someone's job to speak for us, and now, what light bears in us. If starlight be waves and carry through space, say, seed of light in a vacuum. How a country moves with the voices of its people on its back. How we carry our misdeeds in a justice system that sees color and distastes it. Sees the poor under its gavel and wields despite. Blindfold, long removed moons ago, scales and twist and distort. If starlight be how you produce charged particle in acceleration, wave of you brings energy and momentum to give from a source to matter you interact with. How generous a source found in lungs, brain, and aortic sac. Say, what makes you human makes you powerful. Let all who treat you inhumane feel your energy and pulse. If starlight be, and you single photon, rest in mass of zero. Rest in the infinite design of a mouth open before all the numbers of the universe tumble out and become yours for the taking. Linger brief here on the verge. Do not let rolls and officials wipe your name. Use your trachea, your tongue to speak, lest you begin to forget.
That was Felicia Zamora reading her poem, If Starlight Be, from her brand new book of poems, Body of Render. Felicia, thank you for joining us on Words on a Wire.
Yeah, thank you so much, Daniel. I really appreciate it. And thanks for inviting me on.